Welcome to MLB Daily, your one-stop shop for daily baseball content. I am LJ LaFura. Alongside me, I've got Brandon Karam, and we are a Belly Up Sports podcast. We are what they aren't. Brandon, how you doing?
LJ, doing good. Another late night record. It's really not that late right now, just past 11. I work at a restaurant, and I can say that they did have the Sunday night game on at the lone TV at the bar. So every time I walked by, I was checking it out, saw the Astros pulled out a nice win over the White Sox. But yeah, overall, I think it was a great weekend of games for the league. Yankees and Blue Jays series, very good. Yanks win streak ends at 9, but they played a phenomenal game today. Great comeback win for the Blue Jays. And we've got a lot of news to talk about, as a lot has transpired over the last few days. And we got to break this down because there's a lot of different angles and things that we're going to be talking about today.
Yep, so we've picked out, I believe it is 6 stories here, 5 NL, 1 AL. And Brandon, where would you like to start? The NL?
Oh, I think we'll start with the NL. And we might as well just start right at the top of this list, as this is probably the biggest name player we will be talking about today. And that is Mookie Betts has hit the injured list as suffers what I believe is it a wrist or it's a rib injury for Betts. So, you know, you have Mookie Betts, who is on an MVP pace at this point, 3.3 WAR, you know, the 148 weighted runs created plus. You already know that he's very good at baseball. We don't need to go over all of that, but you know, it certainly hurts a lot for the Dodgers to lose Betts, but not as much as any other. It hurts the least because it is the Dodgers, just because of all the other bats and names they have there. And even though he does hit the IL, it should be known that the corresponding roster move, they reactivate Andrew Heaney from the injured list, who had been off to a good start. So hurts. It really hurts to lose Betts, but they get back Andrew Heaney, who had been, in my opinion, pitching outstanding compared to how he did for the 2021 Yankees.
Now, maybe I'm being an idiot, but who got bumped out of the rotation here? So if Heaney's set to have started today, yes, he started today?
Believe so, yes.
Yeah, who's supposed to get this start? That's not important, but for this purposes of this podcast, I'm kind of
worth it. You know what, LJ? Let's call up Dave Roberts. Let's ask him. Andrew Heaney also today, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts. Solid.
Dude's still very, very solid. Yeah, I mean, again, partially why I bring this up is because this is the more interesting angle to me than the Mookie Betts thing. That's no disrespect to Mookie, but the only real part that we can talk about and care about is it sucks for the player. It sucks for the guy on an MVP track. It sucks for a guy, although he's not going to be making really much more money because of this than he already is making. But endorsement deals and overall, you know, breaking out above the pack in LA is very hard. I still don't think, I mean, Mookie Betts is on a, as you said, MVP trajectory right now, and he's still not talked about like a lot of the other stars in the league. It's just, it's a factor of where he is. So he needs those insane numbers to pull him above that crop, and he can't get those if he's on the IL, right? That's really the only thing I can feel bad for. I can't feel bad for this team. I am rather aloof to the fact that they lost him just because, you know, they're going to bring him in somebody who's just as good, if not able to put up comparable numbers for a week stretch.
And not only is it just losing him, but also Walker Buehler out 2 to 3 months. No one's panicking about the Dodgers. That's what's so insane about this team is you lose your $300 million batter. You're most valuable pitcher, I mean, 27 years old, still on you know, a nice $4 million a year deal. You lose him, you know, a potential Cy Young winner in the future in Walker Buehler, and no one cares. It's just like, okay, Dodgers still have Trey Turner and Freddie Freeman and Max Muncy and, you know, the 2019 MVP Cody Bellinger. It's just insane.
That's okay. But moving over to another NL West team, Brandon, we've got some Manny Machado news in here as well.
Yeah, Manny Machado today suffered what, when you go and watch this clip, one of a very gruesome injury involving his ankle. He was trying to like beat out a play at first base, kind of landed really awkwardly on the base when he hit it, immediately collapsed in pain, needed to get helped off the field. I believe they called it an ankle sprain, and shocked that it was just a sprain and there was nothing broken, but that's certainly very good. Yeah, surely good news that he avoided what could have been a fracture. Who knows? That still doesn't mean that he could be out or he couldn't be out for weeks, as ankle sprains can keep you out for a while, especially one of the degree how it happened today. Another MVP level player here that goes down and gets and gets injured. And now the Padres, at least for the what could be a week or two, that's assuming that's how long I'm assuming Manny Machado is going to be out. Still no Fernando Tatis. We haven't heard anything. Well, actually, no, we did hear about Tatis the other day. They said that he's been progressing slower than they thought he would. So you have that. Now you pair it with Manny Machado, who's by far been your best hitter this year. And this NL West, these top two teams are just getting beat up. Not to mention that the Giants, I don't know what the hell they've been doing as of late. What is going on with these top three teams in the NL West right now?
They're basically all trying to keep making it interesting. At what point throughout this year have any of them really tried to pull away? Like, the Dodgers have looked great at times, like they should always look. And then they go and, you know, you start dropping games to Pittsburgh and the like, and Philly at home. And so, like, those are unacceptable losses from them. The Padres start off horribly. The Giants have that horrible middle. And so, really, everyone's found a way to not capitalize on their openings. I think the Giants' opening, at least, is just starting now. So they can definitely, at minimum, make a run back into this division.
It's time for the Giants to really show us if they're real or not. Like, this is when they need to go on a run, in my opinion. It's got to be like these next 2 weeks, like right now.
Are you willing to say that you're out on this team if they don't do that?
No. Out on them winning the NL West. Like, dude, the NL West is, I really think that the Dodgers could be a little bit, the Dodgers could lose this NL West again, is all I'm saying. It's not set in stone just because the Padres have been playing a little rough. Really not, because the Padres had this division lead heading into like yesterday morning or something, I want to say. It's still three games only separate those three teams. LJ, I wouldn't say I'm out, but I would certainly not be feeling the best, as when you have all these injuries happen to the other teams, like you just said, how they started the season. All right, here's a time where we need to capitalize on other things that have happened, you know, things that we don't have control over. Let's capitalize on that, because, you know, if you don't, it's going to happen to you and you're going to get a tough injury and you're going to be sitting there thinking, geez, if we only won a couple more of those games. Or even the Yankees, I think about last year, how many times there was games we could have won. LJ, just one more win in that wild card game is in a different stadium. And, you know, who knows what happens. That's why, as much as when we're going through the process of the season, we like to say that games don't matter. And because most of the time they don't, it really hurts at the end of the season to see like, damn, one game just going another way for us changes everything.
Yep. Honestly, again, this is part of the beauty of this sport, which is the last of a dying breed in America, where more than just the final championship matters, more than that end-all, be-all, you're either a winner or a loser type situation, is baseball, where the division still kind of holds a little bit of weight. I'm not out on them as being a competitive team or being a team you should care about and matter, no matter what. I don't think there's a way that this division race can prove that to me necessarily. However, I think if they don't take control of it in the next 20 days, if they don't take control by the time I get back, I'm leaving at the end of this week for a little bit of a hiatus. By the time I get back, if they're not in control of the NL West pretty firmly, they will not be the favorites to take home that title, take home that trophy this year. Like, there's not going to be a better opportunity for them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Right now, right here is the opportunity. Giants, go and do something with it. We might as well just stick with the Giants, right?
Yes.
LJ, Yermin Mercedes is a San Francisco Giant. And as much as we like to joke around about Yermin, the Giants actually could use a catcher, right?
Yes. Sorry. A little bit of yawn there. Late night recording.
Yerman's making LJ tired. LJ, I thought Yermin was a roller coaster. Isn't that what we said last year?
He is a roller coaster. He very much acts like a roller coaster. First off, give this guy the respect. 68 games, 99 OPS plus last year. That's darn good.
Through all the mental warfare that he had to go through also that we're not talking about, not even bringing up.
What I'm more interested in is, Brandon, have you done your own Yermin Mercedes check-in since this happened?
So I want to say I saw him like in the cage on his Instagram a few days ago.
You missed the best piece of possibly the best piece of Yermin Mercedes social media of all time, him popping champagne bottles after he got claimed by the Giants.
This man will never, that's so awesome. This man will never not make me happy. How can you get mad at this guy? He grinded it out for like 10 years in the minors, 29 years old, finally gets to debut with the White Sox, and you got your manager getting mad at you because you're hitting home runs. Now the whole team, the whole organization is like, we don't need this guy. Why do we need this guy? And he's going to show everyone some late night games on the West Coast. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, LJ.
Yeah, I mean, again, in what better situation, at least? You're on a competitive team again. You're on the West Coast, which is certainly better than being, like, in the Central. Is that the right term? I don't know.
The Midwest.
I'm kind of losing my mind tonight. Not even the Midwest. I'm talking, like, Central West Coast, like Colorado, Arizona. Like, I feel like mountain...
Southwest, okay.
Mountain time.
Yeah. Is Utah.
Absolute hell. Like, that's the coffin corner for baseball players. Because you've... Ideally, you want to be on an East Coast team. You want to be on the Braves, the Mets, the Yankees, or the Red Sox. That's the dream. I think past that, your next choice is going to be the Dodgers. And then past that, it's kind of a crapshoot.
I think Giants and the Dodgers are...
I'm sorry, I meant the Giants and the Dodgers, yes.
Yeah.
Like, they both have this. They still have the same New York pedigree, and they're on late enough consistently that they get that kind of prime billing of being the late-night draws. Once you get into the middle there, you're kind of just floating, and no one really cares. Not enough people are up and focused on baseball to see you. The people who are up late are going to be more focused on the Giants and the Dodgers. It's just a sucky situation to be in. I feel for him. I really do. Except for Chris Bryant. He made his choice. But my point being, much better spot for him to be in. I'm going insane. I'm sorry.
All right. Up next, we're going to talk about Lorenzo Cain and a very nice gesture that the Milwaukee Brewers made. So Lorenzo Cain is struggling this year, to say the least. Has not been the best.
No.
However, LJ, before I get any further, is it fair to say that he's probably one of the most respected players in the league, Lorenzo Cain?
Oh, that's very fair to say.
And I believe that is very much so evidenced here by what the Brewers did before they DFA'd him. They waited until he got to 10 years of service time in the league. And, you know, while, and I'll explain why that's important in a minute, but, you know, overall, when you look at his stint with the Brewers, this is the team that he made his debut with before going to Kansas City during his prime. Since 2018 with the Brewers, I would say to end your career, fairly successful stint. You're talking a 94 OPS plus in over 450 games, plus elite center field, a defense, including the Gold Glove in 2019. I would say a very successful season stint with the Brewers. And they certainly show this back to him, as once you hit your 10 years of service time in the league, you qualify for the pension from the MLB, which is $7,500 a month for the rest of your life. You only get it once you hit your 10 years of service time, though. And with the way that Cain has been playing this season, 32 OPS plus, they could have DFA'd him a long time ago, but the team stuck it out. They said, hey, you know, the correct baseball move is to probably DFA this guy, but we have morals. We understand that these guys are people too. And why not be able to get him that pension after 10 years of service time? And they were actually talking about this on the Yankees radio broadcast this weekend, as Justin Shackle's been filling in for John Sterling. And Shackle brought up that he thinks that hitting 10 years of service time is actually one of the biggest accomplishments of a player's career. They talked to multiple guys who had reached 10 years of service time, and they said that specific day was one of the best days of their entire playing career, which I thought was really interesting. Just to, you know, just say that you've been in the league for 10 years. And honestly, I couldn't be more happy that the Brewers did this for a guy like Lorenzo Cain, who we got to see, at least me and LJ, dominate on the Royals in his prime.
Yeah, it's, again, this is such a, it's certainly like understandably special, like, time to be in, such a situation to be in, because, you know, in order to do that, you have to be consistently really good for such a long time. Like, you have to be at the top of your game for an entire decade. And then it's like, how many times have we gone through? We've had multiple shows here at mile marker numbers where we just sit here and we talk about fun things that have happened over the last X amount of shows and just relive some highlights, relive those glory days. Imagine 10 years of those glory days to sit there and talk about. All of a sudden, you're sitting there on the 10th anniversary of the day you were called up to the bigs. And how could you not just sit there and kind of think about all of the wild dream-like stuff that's happened for you? Now, has Lorenzo Cain announced retirement? I mean, 36 years old, it's certainly not guaranteed, especially when you consider, I mean, prior to this year, one of the best defensive center fielders in the game every single year. This year hasn't been the greatest, but has he announced anything towards that you've seen, Brennan? Because I haven't.
He said, so it says, it's not clear at this time what the future holds. However, there's a tweet. He made some comments. Oh, it's a video, so I can't read the comments, but it seems like that he is not going to be very ambitious to find another club. He's more than happy with just calling it quits here.
You know, and honestly, I'm 100% happy with that. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, especially, I'm fine.
Especially if I'm Lorenzo Cain, because, you know, you really do end on a high note here if you're him. Like, how can you be mad about how your career's gone, everything that you've gotten to do, all the situations you've been put into? Having a World Series ring is the greatest thing ever. And being able to devote yourself to two clubs for your entire career. Like, the joke, honestly, who was it? It was Paul Pogba was the guy that they were talking about in soccer, where everyone's joking, you know, some guys are one club guys, others are two club guys. And I feel like they're very similar. Let me try to pull this up real quick. Yes, that's right. So Paul Pogba, midfielder, I'm not going to get too far into that. Basically, he played for a team in England, Manchester United, for his age 18 season, went to Italy and played for Juventus for 4 seasons, then went back to Manchester United and has played so far through there. So, like, that's a very similar track to Lorenzo Cain. Lorenzo Cain goes Milwaukee for that would have been his full rookie service time, rookie season, then does 7 years in Kansas City, and then finishes up with 5 more in Milwaukee. That's just, like, you know, you've really gotten to understand two cities. You've gotten to let two cities fully appreciate and love you. And both of those fan bases are really great ones to be around for that long a period of time, I feel.
Absolutely. And, you know, this guy, LJ, I'm looking at some career stuff here. Super, super underrated, I think. So you're talking over 1,100 games, almost 1,200 career games with an over 100 OPS plus. And that's including some rough seasons with the Brewers, like 2019, 2021, 2022 are all below that career mark that he's had of 102. Then you bring in the defense, and he somehow only won one Gold Glove, which is amazing when you look at some of these. You're talking a 38 WAR guy in 13 seasons, averaging a little over 5 per 162 games. In my mind, once you hit the 30 WAR mark, I can call you in, you know, I'm going to say a great career. That's a great career to me, over 30 WAR, because you've either had enough seasons at a peak so high compared to the rest of your career that it's like, wow, like he was performing at a crazy level for those few seasons. Or you have someone like Kane who is consistently, you know, season by season, 7 WAR, 3, 5.5, 6.9, nice, 2.6. You know, there's all these great years, all these years of at least, you know, replacement level at the worst. And you throw in just all the other great years he's had. Just a great career. That's all I'm trying to say. Great career for Lorenzo Cain. Don't be sleeping on him. One of the better defensive center fielders of the decade. And certainly a guy I'm going to miss for sure.
Yeah, I actually, really quick before we wrap up on this topic, do want to touch on that 2018 campaign where he goes, that's 6.9 WAR for Milwaukee, his first year in Milwaukee with the Brewers. Kind of interesting because, you know, this is a guy who's literally, he's managing to put up 7 WAR with a 119 OPS plus. Like, that's not the norm. That's not what you're going to see with those type of guys. Keep in mind, 6 is where you really should be theoretically to be in conversation for the MVP. So he put up an MVP season while only being 19% better than the average hitter. That's how much his defense and his base running and all of those extra things, the little things he's able to do well, that's how they were able to make such a big difference for his team and for himself, that he's able to get such a high number with such not middling. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say a 119 OPS plus is middling, but it's not a 7-WAR season. Like, I'm much more apt to say you're going to get 7 WAR at 125 than you are 118 to 119. Like, I feel like that's actually probably my barrier. Like, am I wrong on that? Like, when you get to 125 OPS plus, that's a really good hitting season.
Oh yeah. And
so it shouldn't be like that. It shouldn't be the way his numbers are.
LJ, you're talking about 2018 where he finishes seventh in MVP. His 2017 season hit over 300, 113 OPS plus, a defensive WAR of 1, and ends with 5.5 WAR, which is, that's really good, right? 5.5 WAR. You should at least get something out of it, right? Like All-Star game, a singular MVP vote, maybe even the Gold Glove because you were so good in the field. How about nothing? How about literally nothing for 155 games and a 5.5 WAR? Not a single voter in 2017 thought that he was a top 10 player in his own league, and he had 5.5 baseball reference WAR.
I think I can make a case that he was probably snubbed of 2 to 3 All-Star appearances as well. Like, yeah.
Only 2 All-Stars for him is criminal. Criminal. For a 38 WAR player, 2 All-Star games?
Unbelievable. But we do have a couple more things on here.
We do.
Another potential 38 career WAR player is coming up to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes. O'Neill Cruz has finally gotten the call from the Pirates in what has been, or well, he was called up last year. But in what has been some of the most egregious, obvious service time manipulation that we've ever seen in the league, you know, it only took him being a top prospect for multiple years. I mean, yeah, the hitting in AAA was, there was certainly more to ask for, but I feel like he's done enough in past seasons in the minors to at least warrant a call up earlier than June 19th. However, you're talking a 6'7", 220-pound, I believe, yeah, left-hand hitting shortstop. Just a 6'7" shortstop is crazy to me. It reminds me of the guy that Charlie Goldsmith, one of the beat writers for the Reds, who we had on the show earlier this year, told us about Ellie De La Cruz in the Reds system, who is a 6 foot, I believe he said he's 6'5" as a shortstop. But yes, O'Neill Cruz does play shortstop. They have him also listed at third base and a little bit of outfield, but what looks to be one of the Pirates' top hitting prospects, other than Key Brian Hayes, and in my opinion, should slot in pretty well. He's 23 years old. I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table. The fielding is obviously not going to be all there just because of his size, but we've heard so much about his hitting. You look at some of these seasons he's had in the minors, the stats have been really good. So really nice to see O'Neill Cruz finally called up and see the Pirates finally realize that even though you're bad, calling up O'Neill Cruz is not going to make you a World Series contender, which I think that that's what they thought was going to happen. They were scared.
Brandon, this is, I'm not trying to call you out here. This is a not my favorite take of yours.
How is it not, sir, LJ?
How is it not service time manipulation? It's how June.
Every other team that sucks, they called up their top players. Bobby Witt Jr., MJ Melendez, all the other guys the Royals call up. And then they can be not even close to what O'Neill Cruz is at right now. They can be younger, have worse stats, be worse. Like, I don't know what it just seems a little too obvious to me here that that's what the Pirates are doing, especially a team that has been notorious for doing it in the past.
Yeah, but I don't see it at this point. I think once you get past mid-May, certainly Memorial Day, I throw the service time manipulation situation out the window. Look, though there is clear markers and clear indicators These teams don't try to be subtle about service time manipulation. Never have been. As soon as they can get these guys up, they do. This is a very odd time to be bringing a guy up because of his service time numbers. There was clearly more they wanted to see out of him before they brought him up, and either they saw it or they haven't quite seen it and they've given up on trying to see it before he comes up. And so if they didn't think he's ready, I'm more apt to trust the judgment, especially when, as you're saying, as much as you're saying he's not going to make them a World Series contender right now, he also, like, you also don't want to waste that time. Like, you don't want to waste his development. You don't want to hurt him by putting him into that situation. Let him take his time, because you're not in a rush to be all that competitive. You're not a rush to have an all-star shortstop.
No, you know, that is certainly true. I think my best argument here is that you have the minor league hitting stats already, and sure, the fielding, that's always the team's excuse, is that he wasn't ready fielding. We saw some stuff we didn't like with the fielding. It's what they said about a Gleyber Torres and Chris Bryant. But what all these guys have in common is what they did in spring training. And you can't just throw O'Neill Cruz's spring training just out the window, because he was hitting tape measure home runs, was crushing the ball. Let me see if I can find his stats for spring training, actually. But I remember that's why this whole thing came up, because they thought that, you know, if he's hitting the ball so well in spring training and is one of the top prospects in the league and has been crushing it in the minors, you know, why is this guy not in the majors? When you see, like I said, Bobby Witt Jr. and Julio Rodriguez and Hunter Green and guys that are ranked so close or even behind him and are younger than him, you know, I think that's my real argument. Let me just pull up these spring training stats. Yeah, 333 batting average, 733 slugging over the games that he played in spring training.
Yeah, that's certainly a situation. Excuse me. I got to check something real quick.
I'm not saying that you're wrong, though, because look, you are right. The teams, it's not like they tried to hide it in the past, but that's also because they knew that they could just completely leave it out there in the open and that no one would care. And then finally, I'm sure it was a player that was like, or whoever was like, hey, like, you know, we're actually getting screwed, like, out of a lot of money because you want to give us a fourth year of arbitration or whatever it is. We don't want this.
And let the record show also, as you say, the defense is the excuse. He does have 16 errors this year.
No, and you know, and that's what I said, like, when you're that size and you are playing the infield, it's certainly not going to be the best thing, but there's a DH in the NL now, so, and the Pirates don't have a
press. That's great. That's great for your potential young superstar's development. Immediately shelve him at DH.
Yordan Alvarez, it worked out pretty good. Has worked out pretty good.
It has. I just think those are very different situations. Came into and what O'Neill is coming into. Did you have anything else? I think I'm all set on O'Neill Cruz, but yeah, we have one more topic here, and that is the comments of Michael Lorenzen. He was in a heated battle on the mound. Actually, that's not good words to say right now. That's poor phrasing. He was pitching. Justin Upton was at the plate. He ended up hitting Justin Upton inadvertently, obviously, in the head with a pitch. Of course, you know, no one wants to see that type of thing happen. But, you know, sometimes you can't, not that you can't avoid it, but, like, stuff happens. Michael Lorenzen ends up going out and starts talking about the baseballs again. This is the first time, Brandon, this is the first time in a while we've talked about our balls. Now, after all of this work that they've done, all this tampering they've done to make sure, you know, our primetime games, they get plenty of action, but the rest of them are bad. All the rest of the regional games are bad enough to keep the numbers evened out and everything. Well, now Michael Lorenzen's coming out here and trying to say that the balls are too slick. And that now, especially without the spider tack, they need to do something to give a little more grip on the ball. Brandon, I'm not sure where to take this because, you know, Justin Upton's a pretty stand-up guy. I'm not going to say that this is an excuse by any means because there's really, I couldn't imagine for any reason that Justin Upton would be getting hit by his former teammates. But, like, where do you go from here? Like, how did they manage to screw this up? Why are they screwing it up? Weren't they trying to pre-tack the balls as well?
So that's in the minors. One of the leagues in the minors is testing pre-tacked balls. And you know, all of this is coming from the league that announced that, yes, indeed, in 2021, there was two different types of balls used. That's literally what the MLB admitted. You can go look that up. The MLB has fully said in 2021, there was two different types of balls. It's also, I don't want to say, okay, it's not a coincidence that this year the primetime games are just insane. It's just not. Small sample size, of course, but it's just not. I'm not going to dismiss any of Lorenzen's comments because why should I? When the league is openly okay with just screwing around with the balls and not really caring about how it affects, the pitcher's grip, really anything else. I don't know why they feel the need to screw around with it. What I want to know is that, because we all know prior to 2019, so LJ, if we're going to make a timeline of the balls, prior to 2019, there was nothing different between like 2000 to 2018. There's nothing, right? Because 2019 is the first year we see, or is the year we see just that insane spike in homers. We're never going to get to that point ever again. 2019 is the first year that we see that. Before that, I'm willing to bet that all the balls were mostly the same. And since we have StatCast data since 2015, that can mostly back that up. Since 2019 and on, I have no idea what's going on with the balls and why the MLB felt such a drastic change needed to be made in 2019. And then they realized that they screwed it up. So they tried to revert on that back in 2020. They screwed it up again, 2021. They screwed it up again, 2022. They screwed it up again. I mean, this is 4 years in a row that we are complaining about the one piece of equipment that's actually needed to play the game other than a bat, and that's the ball. And LJ, you know, we're trying not to sound like a broken record. And you've heard us on this show say it every time we bring this up, but I feel like it needs to be said again. MLB is the only league that owns the manufacturer of their main equipment, which is the ball. NFL does not own Spalding, right? Or what is it? Is it Spalding for NFL?
I don't know.
Spalding for NBA.
It's definitely Spalding for NBA. Hold on.
NFL ball.
I'll grab it. You can keep going.
No, it's just like, you know, if the NBA isn't out here
Wilson.
Saying. Okay, so
Wilson.
Okay, so it's the NBA is not, Adam Silver is not like, yeah, guys. So, you know, since we own Spalding now, we're going to make all the basketballs. And you can look at what happened back in 2005 or 2006. The NBA changed the ball for a year. And I believe they changed it like the start of, I forget what season they did. It was recently they changed the ball. And the players hated it. So I'm not going to ever complain about an MLB player with a league that openly does not care about manipulating the baseballs. I'm never going to complain about a player getting mad over it because it's bullshit. This should not be happening. This puts the credibility of the league significantly lower just to the casual fan. No, the casual fan sees this and they're like, wait, they can't even regulate the baseball. They can't figure out what's wrong with the thing that they produce, they make this. It's unbelievable.
And I don't know what to say as a fan of baseball anymore, because how can you trust the product? I pulled up the full quote here. I don't know what Major League Baseball is playing with these baseballs, but that fully slipped out of my hand. It's just crazy, man. As a kid, you think Major League Baseball is the greatest thing ever, and you get here and you realize, what are they doing? All of a sudden, they're going to change the baseballs. I know Gausman had an issue in Toronto, so it's a league-wide thing. These balls are slick. They did get someone hurt, so that's on Major League Baseball for sure. I don't know what's going on. These baseballs are straight out of the package. I mean, I don't know. I just, it's so frustrating because I've never seen, and I never thought I would see, a league that cares so little about the integrity of its own sport. And here these issues come with the slipperiness, whether it's in, I don't know if it's intentional, like something they tried with the baseballs this year, knowing that this might be an issue, or something that came by accident. But for their own selfish deeds, they got lucky that this happened this year instead of last year. Can you imagine if the balls were slipping like this last year?
And all of a sudden, spider tack and all that, or after that?
I'm talking about before, after anything. My point more so is pre-CBA, because this would have been the thing to rally the players. No? Like,
yeah.
As a pitcher, if the it's one thing if the ball's juiced or dead, because that's affecting half the player base either way, positively or negatively. That's going to divide them. And frankly, I think that did a lot of harm to the players' association's cause in this last round of negotiations, was the fact that, you know, so much was dividing the players, the hitters and the pitchers. But a slick ball, no pitcher wants that because they don't want to hurt somebody. They also want their numbers to be decent. They don't want to be hitting guys and having control issues. Hitters, I'm pretty sure the number one thing they don't want to be doing is getting hit with the baseball at 90 plus miles an hour. So this all of a sudden unites them. I don't see how, if this isn't shown as a legitimate issue, they cannot push for more regulation on how the ball is made, or even the full-on sale of the company, because honestly, that's the only, is that even a solution at this point? I don't know. I'm just, at this point, I'm partially over it, because this sport has had no integrity in the last 30 years. So why should we expect it to be any different?
You're absolutely right with that last part. You know, you can read into this, but in 2002, the league tried to get rid of two teams, not expand, but contract. Just completely dissolved two franchises. Thank God it didn't end up happening, and they just ended up relocating one. But it's just all you need to know. There's so many things. You know, we should actually have an episode where we can go into some of the stuff that Bud Selig did. But this dude, the more that I read about Bud Selig, the worse of a commissioner I think that he was. And he's better than Manfred, but that's not saying much. And, you know, it's there's a lot that we could get into.
And it's tough too, right? Because the other commissioners of the other leagues have been bad ones. But somehow they always manage to follow it up with somebody that hits it out of the park. Now yeah. Here we are with back-to-back horrifying messes.
Well, kind of a negative episode, honestly, but that's the news today. That's our news. LJ, do you have anything else tonight?
No, I'm all set.
All right. Well, we have power rankings tomorrow. Yes. In person, yes?
Oh, yeah.
In person episode tomorrow. Check us out, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at MLB Daily Pod, and we will see you tomorrow with our week 11 power rankings.
I think this is 11? The week 10 of 10. This is week 10 of it, because 10. we started it the week after we did player of the week.
Week 10. Hey, double digits.
Double digits. It's the 10th week anniversary of the MLB Daily Power Rankings.
We'll see you.
See you mañana.